We're during our class on the Jewish home. And tonight I want us to take a few minutes to discuss love, which is something that is misunderstood and something which we will, Be'ezrat Hashem, get back to. But maybe tonight we should just begin with a little bit of an introductory class on love. And with time we'll get back to it and develop it. The point I wanted to focus on is the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, which love lasts, a love that's not contingent on anything. I'm just unsure whether we should introduce the idea of love before we deal with the Mishnah or work the other way. So previous years we introduced it, and this year we'll try the other way, and we'll see which way comes out better, and then next year we'll be smarter. So you guys are the guinea pigs. Okay, one concept which we'll leave hanging for now, which is a key concept, is the question, I think Aristotle asked, is something lovable because it is loved, or is something loved because it is lovable? Is something lovable because it is loved, or is something loved because it is lovable?
The first one.
So I think most of Western society will vote the second one. Something is loved because it is lovable. And what we will be discussing at length throughout our learning is that it doesn't really work that way. And we're very fortunate that it doesn't work that way. People will tell you love is not a decision you make. It just happens. Oh, you can be attracted. You can really want to build a relationship with someone. There can be excellent chemistry. But real love is something you build over time. Real love which can weather the storms. Real love which can really be becoming one. That's not about looks, believe it or not. It's not about charm. It's not about many, many external things which will really attract us and should attract us. But that's not real love. And I want us to begin with the Mishnah, but again, the concept which we will keep touching on is the idea that love can be created. The idea that love is not like the flu. Either you caught it or you didn't. As we invest in a relationship, we build love. I know this is a foreign concept to most of you. It seems like, wow, what's he talking about? He obviously doesn't know what love is. Wait. But just bear in mind that this is a blessing, because even if you marry the most beautiful model and you have the greatest relationship, you have no guarantee what either one of you will look like in 20 years. I know you think that there's this feeling when people are young that they'll always remain young. But I'll tell you a secret. I once had a full head of hair. Then, oh, you saw pictures. Okay, I didn't know they had cameras back then. But at any rate, things happen. You know, we change. But did you ever wonder? You see those old couples? And you ask yourself, he looks great. And she, well, she might have had her years. How do they stay together, you know? Very often, the guy could easily find someone younger, more attractive. But you'll see, if you're willing to invest in a real relationship, that as the relationship evolves, that becomes less and less important. It's always important, but it becomes less important. So let's begin with the Mishnah. Ezo hi ahava. Our sages discussed, what is a love that will last? Let's read the Mishnah. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, The Mishnah describes two types of love. And we would think that if the Mishnah wanted to describe a love which is really deep and real, we would think the Mishnah would discuss the love between a man and his wife, right? But the Mishnah doesn't do that. Fifth chapter, 16th Mishnah. Kol ahava shitluya b'davar batel davar batla ahava. If you have love that's contingent on something, then when that thing goes, the love goes. V'sheina tluya b'davar, but if it's not contingent on anything, eina b'tola l'olam, it will never cease to exist. Eizu ahava shitluya b'davar. Where do we find love that's contingent on something? Zo ahavat Amnon v'Tamar. That's the love of Amnon and Tamar. So Amnon desperately desires Tamar. She's extraordinarily beautiful. And he desires her so much, he actually becomes sick out of the desire. And finally his father comes, visits him, and he says, "Dad, please send Tamar over to prepare me some cake or something to eat." And his father sends Tamar over, and he kicks everyone out of the room, and then he takes her forcibly. So he desires her for so long, he actually becomes sick. And finally, he takes her forcibly, and a minute after he's done with what he'd like to do with her, he can't stand her. Wow. You wanted her for so long? And then when you got her, so it lasted a minute, 2 minutes, and can't stand her. He kicks her out of the house. He has his servant. He tells him, lock the door after. Make sure she doesn't come back. Okay. So, what kind of love is that? That's also called love. That's love that's contingent on something. You want to see love that's not contingent on anything? That's the love of David and Jonathan, the love of David and Jonathan. So, David was in danger from Jonathan, and Jonathan was in danger from David, right? Yeah, David was threatening Yonatan's reign, because if David would get the throne, then Yonatan would not. Yonatan was threatening David, because technically at any moment Yonatan could kill David, and yet Yonatan's father was trying to kill David. And David and Yonatan don't focus on what the danger they each can have from the other, but rather they see who the other person really is, and they have tremendous value for one another. So Yonatan runs after David and says, I'm going to be second in command under you. You're going to be king, and my father knows it, everyone knows it. You're going to be king, and I'm going to be under you. And David, in kind, promises he's going to do everything he can for Yonatan's family, and after he becomes king, he almost lives up to that. And when he wavers on that, he loses half the kingdom. He loses his rights to the kingdom. So God really holds him accountable to that treaty they made. What does that mean, love that's not contingent on anything? So I want to start in a different realm. Let's not talk about our spouses yet. Let's begin with our children or with our parents. Let's begin with a good story. Kid comes home and he puts his bag in the room and he walks back, and you see the look in his eye says he's done something naughty. So you're not sure what to say. And he sits down and he's trying to make believe everything's good and calm and dandy and everything's fine. And then you wonder why he put his bag in his room. So you wait till he's outside playing in the yard, and you go to the bag and you check and you find something that shouldn't be there. Let's say dead squirrel. Okay, we're going to be real innocent today. Okay. Find a dead squirrel. Or let's say you find a paper with 30 on it. Took a test and he's not about to tell you he just got a 30 on the test. Okay. Now, as a parent, you sometimes have to ask yourself, do I deal, do I not deal? Let's take another true story. Parent calls me up. Their son is good kid, and they just discovered that the son is doing something, which I'll just tell you as future parents is perfectly normal. he is siphoning money. He's taking money and buying sweets every day on his way to school. They think he's going to school. He gets off the bus, doesn't walk in the main entrance, goes down the block to the supermarket, buys himself some sweets, sits there and devours them, and then goes to school. Or on his way back, alternatively, right, he can do the same trick. So what do you do? The parents suddenly discover the kid has been stealing from them, if we use the simple, blunt terms, for the last few weeks, months, whatever, and they didn't even notice, and now what? So I told the parent, get a pen and paper, and we're going to go over the order of conversation with the kid, okay? Go for a walk, away from the other kids. Don't embarrass him in front of the other kids. And begin by discussing the fact that you love him. This conversation is not allowed to have any yelling. You're not yelling at him. You're not reprimanding him. You're going to educate him. So talk to him. The kid isn't 5. The kid is 12. Talk to him. He's not a little boy. The basis for the conversation is you love him. Start by talking about the fact that a child only has 2 parents and they're the only ones in the world who really care about him, and through thick and thin, doesn't matter what, they love him. And then, after you've discussed that and maybe given a story this way or a story that way, then start discussing the fact that we're all human and we have ups and downs and challenges and we fool. And in that story, throw in a story or two about yourself, about how you, when you were a kid, you did things that were really mess-ups. And you lived, you moved on, you learned. And then start talking to him about the way that we all have weaknesses and challenges. Sometimes we don't deal with them. And give an example that's far out. Don't talk about money. Give an example about sitting on the internet. Give an example of being focused about something when your parent or your teacher calls you and you don't even answer. Take something very innocent and discuss how we all have challenges and we work on them, and sometimes we conquer and sometimes we don't, and certain things we have to conquer in life. Certain things that if we don't conquer in life, then they blossom and then they really come back to haunt us. And then go over and say, you know, sometimes people take things that aren't theirs. And don't ask him if he did or didn't. Tell him. You say, you know, sometimes people actually will touch things that aren't theirs. And sometimes people actually pocket things that aren't theirs. Right? You sometimes pocket things that aren't yours. Don't make him actually say the sentence. All he has to do is nod. By then, chances are tears will be coming down his eyes, and you're not looking to embarrass him. You're not looking to yell at him. And then you start talking to him about it. And you talk to him about the fact that, yes, we want things that aren't ours, and it's normal, and you also want things that aren't yours, but we have to stop. And keep talking. Talk to him about it. Talk to him about the fact that you love him, and you're not yelling at him, and you want to think about it with him. Talk to him about what things he'd like and why he's not, how he can get them in a fair way, etc. What's the basis of the conversation? We love you. Now, we know that if our parents would have held such a conversation with us, we would grow from such a conversation. What would happen if a parent comes in and says, I can't believe you did this! I don't know what's wrong with you. Imagine a parent decides they're going to wait at that store, wait behind an aisle. The kid will buy, and the parent will come barging out and say, well, what do you think you're doing? Right? Okay, I'm going to show him. So the kid is all scared, and you won in the sense that, oh, now he's scared. You think you can do things without my knowing? Ah, great. He can do things without your knowing. Why play the game? He'll find a way. And next time it could be cigarettes and it could be drugs. There's no end to where a kid can get to. How about you want to build? You want to build, then you have to tell him, look, I love you, as is, period. You have a challenge? Yeah, you got to work on it. But basis, love, connection. Now let's go over to marriage for a second. So Tzemach Tzedek said as follows. Love is best expressed by that which you do not do. When Hillel was called to summarize the Torah, what did Hillel say? Madesani lach lechavrach lo tevid. What you hate, Don't do it to someone else. Guys, you could close the iPhones now, right? What do we most dislike? We dislike when someone else focuses on our faults and underlines them with a red pen. So if you really want to show someone else you love them, then you don't look at their faults. You find what's good about the person, and that's what you talk about. That was the thought of the Tzemach Tzedek. Again, love is best expressed by that which you do not do. That's why Hillel says, what is hated upon you, do not do unto others. And what do we really hate? When someone looks at our faults and tells us, here, this is what you did wrong. So the first thing, if you want to love someone, then we focus on what's good. We don't look at what's bad. It was Simchas Torah, and I don't have patience. I'm working on it, but I don't have patience. So you go to a shul, and they're going to dance around for 5 hours.
7 hours.
Okay, so 7 hours, 8 hours. So you guys shouldn't learn this point from me. You guys should enjoy it and love it and dance and sing and be fully involved and put all your merit, all your might into it. And that's what you guys should do. But once upon a time, I was younger. I didn't have as much appreciation for the beauty of Simchas Torah and all the dancing and the singing. So I was walking out. We weren't even home for that Yom Tov. And I was thinking, I wish I could find a minyan where they don't daven that long. And God must have heard my prayer, because a second later someone taps me on the shoulder and says, you want to join us? We're making a minyan down the block. There's an old man. He needs a minyan. We're going to make a really short, quick minyan for Simchas Torah. And I'm thinking, great, I can go learn. Okay, so I come into the minyan. We start davening. We have exactly 13, 14 people. And then someone else comes in the room. There's a man. There's his son, and there's a pail. And I'm trying to daven.
There's a man, there's a son, and there's a what?
A pail.
Okay.
I'm trying to daven, and after about 5 seconds, I start hearing sounds of vomit. And the kid is sitting there with a pail, and he starts vomiting into the pail. So I figure, okay, the kid doesn't feel well. His father's going to take him home. I look back into my siddur, and about a minute later, the kid starts vomiting again. Now, you don't want to stare, right? But after about 45 minutes of this, so I try to casually, you know, go get a safer or something, turn around, and I see this kid has a problem. This kid has a medical problem. He doesn't only have the pail. He has some other contraptions with him. And the kid is sitting there all of davening, throwing up and not throwing up, making all kinds of noises. And you look at the father, and you see the father gently caressing him, holding his hand, talking lovingly to the boy. So the first thing you do is you pray to yourself, I hope I never have to do that, right? But then you ask yourself, how does he do that? Right? So this isn't the dream child a person dreams of. This is a child that has all kinds of complications. This is a child that it's not his fault, but he's been dealt a pretty hard hand in life. And I have to say, I learned more of that Simchas Torah just from being in shul with that father and his son, seeing the love and the patience. When we see something like that, we cringe. We cringe because we're uncomfortable. It's not comfortable having someone vomit next to you. But we should really feel bad for the person. And we should care for the person. And when it's one's own child, it's not necessarily easier. But that's where a person starts growing. A year ago, we had an alumni from Machon Meir who works with children with severe, severe disabilities. That's his job. And I see him one day totally depressed. And I asked him, what's wrong? He says, I'm coming from a funeral, but that's not what's wrong. What's wrong is what happened at the funeral. There's a girl he'd been working with for a few years, and she died. And then they came to the funeral, and everyone eulogized her. And when they spoke about how they tried not to let her get into the way. Even though you were a sister and you were so hard to deal with, each one told a different story about how it was so nice we were able to keep you in the basement and you didn't bother us when we were, and when we wanted to go out to the movies, you were okay with it, you didn't come. All the eulogies were focused on how she was okay because she didn't get in their way too much, even though she had this terrible handicap. He says to me, "You want to know how to eulogize?" He says to me, "I'll tell you what a eulogy means." 2-3 years earlier, a person who I later on had the good fortune to meet, he's a Rebbe in a day school. He had a son that was born with such severe handicaps that from the minute he was born, you couldn't leave him alone. The kid could stop breathing at any minute, and so the parents took shifts. The whole house took shifts. From the minute the baby was born, he was in the hospital, and then when he was released, that's it. Life the way they knew it ended. For the rest of the child's life, he passed away at the age like 5 and a half, they would take shifts watching, ensuring that he doesn't stop breathing. Can you guys imagine that? The couple, I don't know when they got to see one another. I mean, he still has to keep his day job. They have to bring up a family. And they're taking shifts dealing with this child, ensuring he's breathing at night, sitting next to his crib. And it's not 1 year and it's not 2 years. It's about four and a half years. And after a tremendous amount of investments and dealing with doctors and investing everything they have to make the kid's life as pleasant, I guess if you could use that word, as pleasant as can be, the child passes away. And they come to the funeral. And the father gets up to speak. And he says, "This child taught me what love means. I never knew what love meant. But working with him and loving him and investing in him and spending the time together with him, we all discovered as a family, we discovered how you can connect to someone and love someone and invest in someone, things that we never knew. We never knew how to invest in and really love someone where you know you're not getting anything in return. You're just giving. But you're loving." And the father said, "One of my greatest challenges in life, aside from the fact that I'll miss this dear son that just passed away, is where will I continue learning how to love? And where will I be able to invest my love?" So that was the eulogy. I'm summarizing it, obviously. Now let's go back to our Mishnah. Kol ahava shehitluya bedavar. Love that's contingent on something. Batel davar bat la'ava. So if that thing's gone, the love's gone. So you guys probably know the story. A couple was engaged, and a week before the wedding, she got into a terrible car accident, and her face was completely deformed for the wedding. How do you get married? But you know what? These things happen post-marriage too. We have friends that had a gas leak in their house. They walked into the house, smelled gas, and that was the last conscious thing they did for the next 6 months. Their whole bodies were burnt. Like 80 or 85% of the body was burnt, his and hers. They spent the next 6 months in a coma and being patched up. In Baruch Hashem, they're living today. They lead lives. They have children there. But you know what? Over 80% of a person's body has been burnt. How do you move forward, right? Because love is not about the body. So you sit here and you wonder, wait, who does he think we are? We can each attain that level. A person can, and that's what I said is really, in the past, we began with this point. This time I'm bringing it at the conclusion. Love is something that is created. It's not like a virus. It's not, I caught it. I fell in love. There. We're in love. Great. That's not what's going to last. You can be very excited over someone. But real love is something that you build over time as you invest in the other person. So going back to our Mishnah and going back to life and going back to the kid who you find the dead squirrel in his bag, it's all the same concept. Is my love contingent on something? Now I discover he's hiding something from me. And maybe it's not as innocent as the dead squirrel. This is, in truth, what each of us seek in a marriage. Ask any person, they might not reveal it to you, ask any person what they really want in a marriage. You want unconditional love. You want the feeling that this person will know my faults, accept me and love me with my faults, won't come and criticize me for my faults. That's what every person wants. But the big challenge is, can we give it? That's the big challenge. And that's where we begin our discussion of love, with the thought, ahava has to be sheina tluya b'davar, not contingent on things. So you may be severely disappointed by certain things that happen. I'll tell you a secret. Not you may be, you will be. Guaranteed. I told you guys the story. He begged her, please don't. But she did anyways. She sat on the bus for the umpteenth time, reading her credit card number to whatever she was buying. And someone actually sat there and jotted it down. And by the time they discovered it, they were bankrupt, and identity theft was rampant, and took years to patch up. Now, he's standing there looking at all their savings going down the tubes, and he begged her not to do it. Now what? So they lost a lot of money. So she was wrong. So he told her not to do it. Eve, don't eat from that fruit. Right, the world began with a conversation. Please don't. And then she feeds it to him, doesn't even tell him she's feeding him. Right? He only discovers he's eating from the forbidden fruit down the road. So you build. So life is about dealing with one another's shortcomings, learning to move forward with them. Now, obviously, this is easier said than done. But that's our first class on love, to be continued, Be'ezrat Hashem, next week.